Hour 3, Triple Option with RBKD. I am Kevin Dunn here with Rod Babers and Brad Kellner. We are two in. We got two to go. We're live. We're local. We are digital. It is hot outside. Get that Horn app. Hopefully you're near a pool. Hopefully you're off work or driving home just to get your weekend started. HornFM.com if you want to check out any of the shows and the lineup. Saw Tyler Campbell. He was recording something in here. He does a great show on Saturday.
TC.
Got a lot of good shows. We talked about Stuttered, and KC will be on as well. So you can check out all that stuff. Just get to HornFM.com. Quick little update here, man. It is all Cardinal as Stanford is beating Texas Tech 15-2. That thing is in the top of the ninth. So Stanford's not going to have to waste any arms. They use their ace. He gets the job done. The offense gets the job done. We'll talk more college baseball, specifically Texas baseball, coming up at 6 o'clock. But one of the big stories nationally, and you're seeing this all over the place, is the 12-team college football playoff proposal. Rod got into that a little bit last week. And this, you know, obviously this has been a debate and a discussion for a long time. A majority of my life, because I've been watching this stuff for so long and remembering it, is that college football really, I mean, it was voting. It was a beauty pageant. And it was ridiculous growing up. We always thought this thing should go to a four-team playoff or something like that. They go to a four-team playoff, and then you thought maybe, all right, the next step will be six and give those first two, really give them a carrot so they do earn their way to those first two seeds. And then you've got really three through six playing. But the panel and the proposal is to go to 12 teams. Rod, I'll start with you. I think if you can be adults about it, and I think we have been, that there are positives and negatives to both these things, and it's kind of fun just to talk it out. We do have some good text coming in on the Specs text line, 337-3776, if you want to give your thoughts on the 12-team playoff proposal. You're down for it.
Yeah, Pete Thamel threw it out there that he had talked to some sources who were really they basically were enthusiastic about expanding the college football playoff. He said they were more adamant about it than ever before, and this is from ADs and university presidents and network executives, all these different folks involved with the college football playoff. And he said 12 was the number that they had really they had really stuck on, right? They were stuck on 12, that it seemed to have gendered a little bit of unanimity between all the different parties, that everybody thought 12 was the path of least resistance for them, that it would provide more added value and it would solve a lot of problems. I don't know if that's the case, but I will say I do think it keeps more people invested later on in the season, especially the players, but especially the fans of teams. You believe your team still has a shot. Now, we're still talking about roughly 30, 40 teams or so, still a separation of the have and the have-nots. But the truth is the college football playoff Final Four has just been way too exclusive. You need a little bit more inclusivity with that group, and I think now you'll get some of that. Now, it just may be the illusion of, you know, maybe the illusion of options, and it may be the illusion of parity. But the truth is, I think for fans, it'll be a more comfortable illusion than the reality right now, which is my team loses the first, you know, they lose their first game of the season or their second game, their season is done.
Yeah.
It's over.
If you're a G5 fan, you lose one game, it's see you
it's
later.
Over. Yeah.
And if you're a P5 fan, you lose two games and it's season over. And some people like that. KD, I know you're a huge fan, right? You value the regular season and you want the games in week one to mean as much as the games in week 12. This is a money grab, guys.
No doubt.
Let's be honest. And the timing of this is no coincidence. I mean, how much money did TV partners, conferences, and schools lose last year?
And they don't have the illusion of it being a student-athlete anymore, which they were trying to hold on forever.
Right.
They cared about how many games was going to pile up. This is going to be a lot of games.
I think that's part of it.
Which is good, too.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it, the student-athlete illusion thing, but I think more of it has to do with just COVID and how much money so many important power brokers in college football lost last
year. I think that's part of it.
And they're just looking to recoup it. And look, we're all looking to make more money all the time, and adding more games, especially playoff games, gives you the ability to make more money. So I agree with Rod's point. I mean, you get less opt-outs from fans and from players.
Mm-hmm.
That's become kind of an issue in recent college football, right? Even New Year's Six bowl games that we used to really value, you see a bunch of guys opting out of those games. Well, now you've got 12 teams that are competing for a national championship every year, plus you have teams competing way longer into the season for a spot in the college football playoff every year. That'll help make the product better in terms of the players on the field. But, of course, you still have the same problem in college football, where the question is, how many teams really have a chance to win the national title?
Yep.
Like, now the question goes from how many teams have a chance to make the playoff, and obviously there's more that do now, but how many teams realistically have a shot to win the national championship? And sure, an Alabama or a Clemson or an Ohio State could be upset by a lower seed, but could a lower seed really beat, like, all three of those teams on their way to a national championship? That seems like that's not going to happen with just expanding the playoff.
Yeah, they'll get the, you know, they'll get the chance to, and yeah, whether it's a realistic chance or not, I think that's to be determined. And I think KD's right that it'll still end up being the same four teams, but now at least you have a little bit more variety. I threw out the stat that if you win,
really the fourth one hadn't done much, and I'm looking at my Irish.
And you talk about the 7-year window. If you were just, you know, hypothesizing, right, the thought experiment, if this actually 12-team playoff had existed for the last 7 years, you would have had 29% of the FBS teams that would have qualified, and 48% of the Power 5 teams would have made the playoff once in that 7-year window with the current 12-team proposal. At this time, I think we sit at 8.5% of the FBS teams that have made the 4-team format and 17% of the Power 5 teams that have made the format. So it's just about in having more inclusivity.
Or the illusion of inclusivity. As I said earlier, the problem, this does not fix the problem. The problem is the competitive balance, really, from those top three and everyone below them. So you really feel like there's only three programs year in and year out that have a chance. Now, you can get an LSU in there, so that can almost be added, and those things can be juggled a little bit, but adding 12 teams is not going to do it. I think it will take away from just how special the regular season is. It's just, look, it's not going to have the same value. Is it going to ruin college football? No, nothing's going to ruin college football, but it will take away from that. That's irrefutable.
Right. I just, you know, you look at the percentage of teams that make the playoff in every sport, and college football will still have far and away the lowest percentage of teams make the playoff.
It will, but that's also one of the things that separates college football.
For sure. Yeah. It's not going to NBA level, though, where like more than half the teams are making it to the playoff.
No, thank God.
It's not going to NFL level. And we love the NFL playoffs. Nobody thinks those are watered down. And we love the NFL regular season, right? We're all cool with that.
NFL regular season doesn't mean as much as the college football regular season.
Right, right, right. But yeah, it's still, I don't know. I still think people are going to watch.
Oh, they will. It's going to be it's still a great product.
People are going to watch even more.
Yeah.
The ratings will go up. So, but it doesn't make KD's statement wrong necessarily, because I think it will still be the same elitist class of schools. It'll be Bama, it'll be Clemson, Ohio State.
It doesn't fix the problem.
It doesn't necessarily fix that problem about parity, but I do think you'll get more, you'll get a happier fan bases, you'll get happier ADs, you'll get happier presidents, because they'll get more money, as BK's talking about. But also, they'll be invested later on the season. One loss won't mean your dreams and hopes are dashed of getting to the postseason and playing one of those games. And we'll get rid of some of these bowl games that nobody cares about. They've already said 4 to 10 bowl games are probably going to have to disappear as a result of this.
That's one of the best arguments. Those things have talk about watered down. Those things have lost their value, and there's no question. And also the point you guys made earlier about, well, just the players and the way the players are now, some of these guys opting out, I think that's a good argument. I think there are arguments to be had on both sides. I think the appropriate and correct call would have been to go to 6 and to play this a little bit more slowly.
I do love the aspect of on-campus playoff games.
Yeah, I do too.
And I wouldn't be opposed. I don't think this is part of the proposal. Like, I think the way this thing is set up now is the top four teams get a bye, teams 5 through 12 play, and all of those matchups are at the higher seeds home stadium. Mm. And then the second round is neutral site games, kind of like what we've had with the college football playoff the last few years. Mm. I wouldn't mind every round until the national championship game being an on-campus game. Just like extra reward for the top teams for having a really good regular season. A bye week's a hell of a reward, right? That's just one less chance you have to lose and you get some rest. But I think that'd be pretty cool. Like the way the NFL does it, to where every game before the Super Bowl is at your home stadium or the home stadium of the higher seed. I wouldn't mind college football doing that. I don't think they will, because they can make more money from neutral site games, but I wouldn't be opposed to that being part of this moving forward at some point.
We all can agree the motive is money. The motive is not how do we make the sport better, even if it does. And I think adding going to 6 probably would, and at some point you go to 8 and maybe even get to 12. But I'll be curious to see how it plays out.
Can I counterpoint your point? And I'm not even sure I agree with what I'm about to say.
Throw it out there.
Well, that's a Okay, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Most politicians. Great. What do you mean?
How many people just change the channel? And the politicians do a
good
job.
That's all they do all the time.
Yeah, but they don't preface it like that.
I wish they would.
Yeah,
so if you're going to make a point a politician would, well, this ought to be good.
So I agree. Oh, boy. So I agree with you in terms of the diminished value of the regular season, right? I do think that's irrefutable. But don't you think there will be more meaningful games in the regular season? And I don't mean more meaningful. More meaningful games in a regular season because more teams have a chance for longer, and yeah, you might get better schedules too.
I'm hoping, because that's something that's really changed from when I was a kid. You had these incredible matchups that were non-conference matchups that we get some, and there are some schools that are still doing it, but yeah, I think it'll take away the fear factor of we can't lose one or two games, and maybe what it will do is, hey, this is going to test us. And this is going to show our weaknesses and things that we can improve on as the year goes on. But it will take away, I know what you're saying, but it will take away just the importance of that game that, right. Oh my God, this is October 31st and both these teams have a loss, but they could still maybe get in, but this is essentially a playoff game.
Yeah, the games aren't more meaningful.
But there will be schedule.
And there will be more meaningful games just because there are
down
more teams
trying
that
to get
have
in.
A shot.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess that's a pro, but it also kind of confirms your point, but it adds sort of a different element to the play.
There's a lot of stuff on here, some pros and cons.
It's just a separation of the half and half nots. It's just another way in which it'll be done. It'll like solidify itself even more, it'll become more clearer and more transparent now that there are only 30 to 40 schools that actually even have a chance to win the national title each year in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those schools now, with the name, image, and likeness, with the college football playoff now expanding, I know it sounds like, oh, more schools are going to be involved. No, I think it's actually just going to clear up the picture of the group of five separating from the power five, and then even within that power five, there being an elitist class that's separated from that group.
Yeah, the good news is, the G5 now has a chance, and I know we don't root for G5 teams, but like UCF in 2017, would they have won the national title? Probably not, but the fact that they ran the table and beat a good Auburn team by multiple scores in their New Year's Six Bowl and they didn't have a chance to compete for the national championship, like that's why expansion is good to me. Like, because there's probably only 30, 40 teams that have a shot, but like it used to be, my God, every G5 team and every independent outside of Notre Dame had no shot. So now they at least, if they have one really, really good season, they'll have a chance to compete.
Yeah.
Are they ever going to win it? Probably not. But like the Boise States, the UCFs of the world that have been clamoring for a shot over the years, LTCU before they got in the Big 12, they'll finally get one. And I think that's good for the sport.
Chad brought up a point today. I joined his show in that, well, if it's based on conferences, what if South Florida is, or someone like that, is 19th in the country? Then all of a sudden, that's going to feel like everyone gets a trophy.
Yeah, the good news is they're not married to every conference. Mm.
It's the Power Five, and then it's those six that come after. Yeah. But I'm really curious to see how those six are going to play into it and exactly how they're going to be selected.
How about your Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
They're going to make them join a conference, aren't they?
They're trying to.
Yeah.
Like in the proposal, even if Notre Dame is the number one team in the country, it cannot receive a bye or be seated higher than fifth.
Which is stupid.
Yeah, stupid.
If they should be, then they should be. If not, then obviously they shouldn't get a bump. But yeah, that's just forcing. Look, it's just making everything as cookie cutter as possible in like every other sport.
Yeah. And by the way, the proposal, so what I'm looking at, this is from an ESPN article, and I think this is the proposal. I don't know if there are multiple proposals being spitballed. I'm sure there are details to this proposal that are being discussed right now. But this article I'm reading says there would be no limit on the number of participants from a conference, and no league would qualify automatically.
Yeah.
So it would call for the bracket to include the six highest-ranked conference champions, but like if the Pac-12 is not one of those, then they might not have a team in. It's like if somehow like the AC and, I don't know, the Fun Belt has a team ranked higher than any Pac-12 team, which probably has been the case in some recent years, then the Pac-12 won't have to make it. So that's good. Like, I don't want like four-loss Pac-12 team being in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just feels like a huge waste of time. And odds are there's going to be one or two teams that feel like a waste of time.
Probably more than one or two.
In this thing with 12. But, yeah, I really don't want any four-loss teams. Like, oh, man, just because the Pac-12 is technically a Power 5, we've got to put one of their teams in. That would be bad.
One of the things I like, and it was too much when you were just, it was a beauty pageant and you're voting on it, and you could still say, well, what about that fifth team this year? Which is why I'd go to six, arguing the seventh and eighth, how they didn't get in. They're going to be holes. One thing I love about it is this is one of the few sports that I can think of that it's not about just getting hot. That you can't have lapses in your season. You have to be consistent all the way through just to get the chance to go win a national championship, and that's going to change a little bit.
No doubt about that. You might not abide, but the dude abides.
Oh, the dude does abide. Sam Dude with Barton Creek Lending Group, the name to remember when you're ready to refi your home or maybe buy a new one. Rates are still low, but they're creeping back up. So if your interest rate is above 4%, give him a call right now. I don't like to do that timely sell, which is why I don't do with a lot of stuff. But if you're following these interest rates and following kind of what's going on with inflation, I would jump on this and jump on this really quickly. Website's easy to remember, homeloandude.com. If you're affected by the winter weather, insurance is not covering everything. You can tap into the equity of your home. Sam will help you out with that. And they really prefer to work with them because they want a local mortgage lender. They don't want a big box bank, and Sam is local, and he's going to help you out. He's going to answer your call. Very friendly, very smart guy. Find him at homeloandude.com. As BK said, the dude abides. It's homeloandude.com.
So ESPN put out what last year's college football playoff would have looked like if it had 10 teams. Of course, it had four teams. You had Bama, you had Clemson, you had Ohio State, and you had Notre Dame. Here's what a 12-team college football playoff would have looked like last year, and I want y'all's thoughts on whether or not this would have intrigued you if you would have cared about all of these games. So we just mentioned the Notre Dame caveat. Notre Dame would not have been a top-four team. Oklahoma actually would have been number four since they won the Big 12, and they were the fourth-highest-ranked conference champion. So it would have been, you know, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Those would have been the four teams that would have gotten byes.
Kind of a big deal there.
Big deal there.
So
absolutely.
This is not fair. As much as you may hate Notre Dame, we could admit that.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but join a conference. No, but it's still not fair, but join a conference. But I just want y'all in a conference.
Okay, so it's not about being fair. It's about more pettiness like that.
It's not fair that y'all aren't in a conference.
Why?
Well, you kind of get a bite. So Chad was saying this, right?
What about BYU?
Oh, I think they should be in a conference too.
Okay, but they're not.
I know. Well, I think y'all should be all in conferences.
Why does everything have to be the same?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm asking a lot of questions and not getting a lot of good answers.
Well, I think for the sake of everything being fair,
if they're still playing, it's not like they're playing a cupcake schedule. They're playing a really tough schedule. No, and if you can look at that schedule and say, well, they deserve to be a top four seed, then this whole thing by just getting going is unfair.
I think they should. Yeah.
But we're doing it for fairness.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess the committees or whoever's putting this proposal together's thought is, well, Notre Dame gets its bye during conference championship week.
Okay.
That would be my guess, and that's the punishment they're trying to levy on Notre Dame.
Gotcha.
That would be my thought.
By the way, if Notre Dame joined a conference, I'd be totally fine with that. But it's the gun to the head that I don't like that in life in general.
Mm. Yeah, I don't have one.
I see it.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
Like Jeffrey Toobin, keep your hands above the desk.
So the 5-12 matchup, I don't think you would have been too scared by this one. Notre Dame-Coastal Carolina would have been a game last year. Your 6-11 matchup, Texas A&M versus Indiana. 7-10, Florida, Iowa State.
That's interesting.
And then 8-9 would have been Cincinnati and Georgia.
And you would have gotten Florida to actually have those guys play, I'm assuming, which is a great point for the people that are talking about the Pro 12.
Like, those games are all pretty intriguing. I mean, Notre Dame would take care of Coastal Carolina.
What's the Indiana one?
A&M.
A&M.
Like, I'd pick A&M to win that game, but Indiana had a really good year. And they got conned out of the Big Ten title.
That's true. That's
remember?
True. I wouldn't be that interested in that game, but it's not a bad
best
matchup.
Game
I like that matchup.
I mean, Cincy Georgia played in the Sugar Bowl. That was an awesome game.
That came down to the
last minute. So I don't know. Like, I'd watch all of those games, and I know you guys would.
Yeah, I mean, I'd watch them too.
Like, those games are going to be intriguing to me, but ultimately, your national championship game probably would have been the same two teams.
Yeah.
And
which doesn't fix the problem.
You're just playing, yeah.
If it's a problem, and maybe that's not a problem. They're just kicking everyone's ass. They're kicking everyone's ass.
It's a problem.
Yeah, Max Olson put out a 12-team college football playoff model over the past decade. So take it all the way back to like 2011 is where I believe he started this. And he just looked at college football playoff appearances. If there was a 12-team format going back to 2011, Alabama still would have made it 9 times. Ohio State, 8. Clemson, Oklahoma, 7. Florida State and Georgia and Oregon, 5. Florida, LSU, Notre Dame, Penn State, Stanford, Wisconsin, 4. Then after that, you get into your 3s and your 2s. Actually, Baylor and Kansas State and TCU would have made it 3 times, according to his study. Along with Boise State, UCF, and Washington, and Auburn, Michigan, South Carolina, and A&M would have made it twice, along with USC. Texas wouldn't even made it once.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State would have made it 1 year.
Shout out. 0 appearances for Texas.
Even with
That's just how bad this team has been over a decade.
Facts are facts.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take your thoughts. It's interesting, it's a great conversation, a lot of points on both sides. It's definitely
it's happening.
It's a matter of when, not if, anymore. Yeah. And it feels like it's 12 and not 8, like we thought. When we come back, we'll get you some college baseball score updates. Katie's excited about something.
Katie's excited. NC State must hit a homer.
More importantly, though, NC State just hit a homer.
He's rooting against Arizona. I mean, sorry. Yeah, rooting against Arkansas. I mean.
Yeah.
Got to be.
Me too.
I've been a Texas fan for a long time. And that's what I love about BK. BK probably wouldn't have been alive for that, like in the Southwest Conference.
Oh, for the rivalry?
But it doesn't matter. It's That's a true Longhorn right there.
I hate him.
They have the best odds right now to win it all still. Yeah.
Screw them.
I think Texas has third best odds behind Vandy.
Vandy's
second.
What's coming up on your rant of the day today, sir?
Oh, you know what? We're going to talk some NBA. We hadn't gotten a chance to talk NBA on the show. It's just been a lot of stuff going on. So we'll get into some NBA and why the Western Conference may be a youth movement going on in the Western Conference. And we'll talk about that and more in Roch Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to talk about the NBA playoffs a little bit, specifically the Western Conference. The Eastern Conference, less drama in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. I still think the Nets are going to come out of the Eastern Conference. I think most people believe that, even though now that series with the Bucks is a little bit more interesting now that it's 2-1. I still think the Nets are going to run away with the series. But I digress. Getting back to the Western Conference, the biggest surprise right now in the NBA playoffs has to be that the Suns and the Jazz are both up 2-0 in their series. Suns are playing the Denver Nuggets. They're up 2-0 in that series, and the Jazz up 2-0 in the series versus the Clippers. BK, are you very surprised by this outcome on the Western side of things, that both the Suns and the Jazz, and I know both of those teams are, you know, they were the two best regular season teams, so I get that. That's usually not the case in the NBA playoffs, that the best team in the regular season ends up being the best team in the postseason. Seems like that actually may play out this year with these two young teams who are ahead of schedule with the Suns and the Jazz.
Yeah, the Suns' results don't surprise me that much.
Because it's Denver?
Only because of the Lakers' injury issues in round one and because of Denver's injury issues in round two.
Mm.
Like, the Nuggets are playing without Jamal Murray, who's one of the better players in the league, and he's their second-best player. And the Nuggets are also playing without Will Barton, who is their point guard and a starter. So the Suns, now they earned their number two seed. They've earned their spot, and they've played really, really well as of late. But they are benefiting from an easier path than I think a lot of people expected. But, yeah, Utah being up 2-0 on the Clippers is surprising.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they've been dealing with some injury issues, too. I mean, the Jazz have been dealing with some injury issues. But right now are playing really good basketball. I want to get into how both of these teams kind of ended up with the lead 2-0 in both of their series right now. I'll start with the Suns, and you talked about the Suns have had a very opportunistic route so far to getting where they are, but I do think they are ahead of schedule. I remember when LeBron James said, and this was, man, in 2016, it had to be, it was a long time ago, it was back when Devin Booker first got in the league, and LeBron James said that he thought Devin Booker was basically going to end up being an all-star. I think the quote is, and it was on Uninterrupted, he said, quote, that no one knows about, the one guy no one knows about, you know what, I'm going to be honest here. If it's someone who is under the radar right now that I believe is going to be a really, really, really good player, an all-star player in this league, it's Devin Booker from the Phoenix Suns. That was in 2016. I remember when LeBron said that, I said, man, I started watching Devin Booker. I randomly started watching Devin Booker whenever I got a chance. He did not disappoint. I mean, he was a real deal. And even later on, remember that was the 2020 All-Star snub. Devin Booker got snubbed, and then LeBron James went off again and said that Devin Booker was the most disrespected player in the league. Simple as that. I think he tweeted that out. I think he also said him and Damian Lillard were the most disrespected players in the league. LeBron James might have been right about that, actually. Turns out, because Devin Booker and Damian Lillard both have shown out recently. But LeBron James changed his number recently to number 6 from number 23 after he got ousted by the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker. Gave the last game-worn number 23 from LeBron to Devin Booker.
Wow.
He's a big Devin Booker fan.
Yeah, he is.
He loves him some Devin Booker. So Devin Booker is...
Devin Chinese?
Devin Booker is multiracial in a lot of ways, right? He's got like...
Well, because LeBron loves him. So.
No, that's, I didn't think you were going to... I thought you were talking about his actual background.
Yeah, that actually is curious.
He is biracial, though.
Look, I think Booker is a blast to watch.
No, he is. He's fantastic. Devin Booker, he's averaging 27 points now, 6 assists, and 5 rebounds. And what I love about what the Phoenix Suns are doing, they're doing a lot of this with defense. They have the best defense in the playoffs right now. And you start looking at the different ways that they are finding ways to win. I look at that second half against the Suns where against the Nuggets where the Suns scored 71 points per 49 possessions in the second half of game 2 when they blew them out. So to put that in perspective, if you add that up, extrapolate that, I should say, that works out to 144.9 points per 100 possessions, which is higher than the Nets are scoring right now. So they have found something chemistry-wise, and they are playing at a really, really high level. They only trailed for 17 seconds of that 123-98 win over the Nuggets. Man, they mean business.
Yeah.
And you go look at, they had the best record in the NBA, if you're just tracking it, best record in the NBA since February. They had the 6th best offense and the 6th best defense based on offensive and defensive efficiency, but they are the best defense left in the playoffs. And Phoenix, you look at it, only the only player to miss more than basically 2 games is Dario Saric, who basically is a bench player for them. I'm not even sure he's a good player, but he's the only one that's missed any significant time. Going back to your point, they have been the beneficiary of Lady Luck. The injury bug has not hit them at all. They've basically been the healthiest team in the playoffs. Remember that year Toronto won the championship with Kawhi? Remember one of the random things was they stayed healthier than any team in the playoffs. They really just didn't have a lot of guys go down with injuries. They are also benefiting from that kind of luck. That can be big. DeAndre Ayton has been a game changer for him defensively. Here's a great stat, though, about what DeAndre Ayton's been able to do with Nikola Jokic. So DeAndre Ayton guarding Nikola Jokic, and by the way, guarded Anthony Davis too. So giving props for that, even though AD was hurt most of that time. He's shooting 75. He's making 75% of his shots from the field. And when the Suns have outscored the Nuggets, basically they've outscored them by 29 points in the 62 minutes so far in this series where Jokic and Ayton have shared the floor together. So Ayton has been just a defensive juggernaut in this game. He's actually been a better defensive player than Jokic, which is not tough to do, and that's why they're actually outplaying and neutralizing the MVP. It's because they found a weakness they can exploit. BK, you brought it up yesterday, the pick and roll. They've done a really, really good job of making Nikola Jokic stressed on the defensive end, and it's actually had an adverse effect on him on the offensive end, too. But he's still, obviously, the MVP, and he's great. All right, jumping to the other side of the Western bracket, let's talk about the Jazz real quick. And I got a great stat about Donovan Mitchell. We just talked about Devin Booker and how he's coming of age. It's really a changing of the guard happening in the Western Conference right now. These young superstars starting to assert themselves. It's a great stat. So over Utah's past 13 playoff games, dating back to the first round series versus Denver in the bubble last season, Donovan Mitchell is now averaging 34.6 points per game, 5.1 assists, 4.1 rebounds, and almost 5 made 3-pointers. He's shooting over 50% from the floor, 47% from downtown, and 92% on his free throws. He has the highest postseason scoring average of any player over the past 2 years. Higher than Luka, higher than KD, higher than Dame Lillard.
He's awesome. He's a superstar, Right, people have been hesitant to call him a superstar. Everyone's been calling him a star, but people have been a little scared to throw that precursor.
Yeah, this might be the postseason you start adding that to it.
He's a superstar, man. He is awesome. He is incredibly fun to watch, and he is putting that team on his back. I know Utah's deep. Gobert's awesome, and they've got a ton of pieces, but Mitchell is putting that team on his back, and they're two wins away from a conference finals berth.
Since the start of the last postseason, he's played in those 13 playoff games I talked about. In the past 20 postseasons, that the 34.6 points per game average that he has in his last 13 playoff games, in the past 20 postseasons, only LeBron has had a higher scoring average in a 13 playoff game span. Isn't that freaky?
Yeah, that is.
Like some of the numbers he's putting up, they're mind blowing, and he's getting a lot of help. Jordan Clarkson, did he win Sixth Man of the Year?
I don't know if they've announced it yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Gobert was just DPOY.
Okay.
They announced defensive and coach of the year and then MVP.
Okay. I could be way off about that, but he did have 24 points. Jordan Clarkson showed up and had a great game for him too. But the real separation in this series has to be at the 3-point line. We know the Clippers are one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the league. That's not really bearing out. That's not really playing out in this series so far. The Jazz have been the more efficient team from the 3-point line. They were 20 of 39 on Thursday. That's 51% from the 3-point line. And the Clippers were 11 of 30. That's 37%. So if the LA Clippers don't switch that, they don't flip the script from the 3-point line, this series is going to be over with sooner rather than later. And remember, in the regular season, the Jazz, I mean, they were one of the best teams in the NBA at defending the 3-point. They surrendered the fewest 3-point attempts and 3-point shots in the NBA. And they had the second lowest 3-point percentage field goal defense allowed. So they were a really good 3-point defense, really good perimeter defense. I'm a little worried if I was a fan of the Clippers or a fan of the Nuggets, I'd be freaking out right now. I think both of these teams are legit. I think they're well-rounded. I think they're deep. Both of these teams probably go 8 deep, BK, easily.
Yeah, they do. And Jordan Clarkson did win Sixth Man of the Year.
Shout out.
I don't know how I missed that announcement.
But, yeah, nobody cares about Jordan Clarkson, that's why.
Yeah, I feel like you can stick a fork in the Nuggets. I'm not saying this thing is going to be a sweep, but they're not going to win 4 out of 5 against Phoenix the way Phoenix is playing. The Clippers, I'd still give a chance to beat Utah. I mean, they were down 0-2 to the Mavs. Now, I think Utah is a better team than the Mavs, but the Clippers are loaded with talent, and postseason Kawhi gives you a chance, and the NBA is going to want an L.A. team in the conference finals, so I wouldn't be super shocked if some of the whistles start to favor the Clippers a little bit.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know, the NBA.
That's never happened.
No, absolutely not. Why would I say such a ridiculous thing? But no, I mean, those two teams have been very, very impressive. And nobody wanted to pick either of them, let alone both of them, to make the conference finals, right? The Clippers were the sexy pick in the top half of the bracket. And then the Lakers, everybody thought the Lakers were going to beat the Suns. And we'll never know. I stand by, if the Lakers were healthy, they would have beaten the Suns.
Oh, but I agree with that. Yeah.
Nobody wanted to pick those two teams. And one of them has a damn good shot to represent the West in the NBA finals.
Yeah, 13 teams had a better odds to win the NBA title to start the season than the Suns. And now I believe the Suns are at maybe 10-1. That was actually a week ago, so they could be better than that.
They are better now.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Man, I wonder what they were before the start of the season. I wish I would have gotten that.
Yeah, I thought I had it here. Yeah, I don't have it. Sorry. 40-1. Sorry, they were 40-1 to start the season based on this Westgate Superbook.
Just to win the West, they were probably like 25-1 or something like that. There's some money the cousin could have made.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. And we've got, a couple of games tonight. I mean, y'all have the Nuggets winning this one. Denver's a 2-point favorite at home. Can they win a game in this series?
I think they get one. But the thing about the Suns, which will be interesting, is if you're really watching, and I've talked about this with basketball, if you watch what's on the court, the product, it's really good. I don't think the Suns will move the needle with ratings, though. And I think that's going to continue to be a narrative, which I don't think is fair, but they don't have, you know what I mean?
They don't have you almost superstars
need,
yet.
Yeah, you need those names that will get those kind of randos or those people in the middle in.
No, you're right. You need, you need someone that can draw in the novice basketball fan. These young superstars, even though they're fantastic, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, they're great. They're not household names yet.
No, they're not.
No.
And you need those household names.
The Nets better get there.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
For the NBA's sake,
question. I think the best thing for them would be Nets Clippers. I actually want to see Nets Suns, though.
That'd be cool.
That would be fun.
Would be
in terms
fun.
Of on the floor, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Although no one's beating the Nets.
Nobody's beating the Nets.
Even without James Harden, it feels like no one's beating the Nets.
No.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, it got closer than people thought last night. They thought it was going to be a little bit, you know, that they would separate. Even the Bucks had a big lead early.
Yeah, they did.
And they couldn't keep it.
Got good close. Defensive stop there late, though.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Rod's rant of the day. Some NBA conversation here on the Triple Option with RBKD. When we come back, have we done the impossible? Has society uncanceled somebody? We'll get into the details, and we have some cringeworthy audio to talk about next.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, a Country Music Friday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD, and it's time for another edition of Off the Record. This one comes from the political world. Well, he was a political/legal analyst. And he used to work on television, Jeffrey Toobin. You'll remember him. He was a longtime pundit on CNN, wrote for the New Yorker, which, you know, was actually, I think, where he kind of made his claim to fame. Yeah. He was a writer first and then, of course, a legal analyst later. But anyway, he got in trouble, was canceled during COVID because he exposed himself on a Zoom call with staffers on a meeting with the New Yorker staff. And he says that it was a mistake, but a lot of people claim that he was he failed to be master of his own domain while on that Zoom call. You get me? Seinfeld reference. But anyway, he's back. Actually, the New Yorker has said they're not going to bring him back after the incident, that they don't believe he deserves to come back and write for the New Yorker. But CNN actually is allowing him to come back, and he did an interview with anchor Allison Camerota. I'm sure I mispronounced her name.
Don't look at me.
But she in the CNN newsroom, they did an interview with Jeffrey Toobin, and they actually addressed the very inappropriate conduct that got him canceled in the first place, exposing himself on a Zoom. And BK's got some of this audio, and it's as awkward as you think it would be.
It is.
Yeah. Let's bring in CNN chief legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin to talk about this and more. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello, Allison.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, indeed.
I feel like we should address what's happened in the months since we've seen you, since some of our viewers may not know what has happened. So I guess I'll recap.
Know.
I'll do the honors.
Where are your hands, Jeffrey?
Okay. In October, you were on a Zoom call with your colleagues from the New Yorker magazine. Everyone took a break for several minutes, during which time you were caught masturbating on camera.
Mm-hmm.
You were subsequently fired from that job after 27 years of working there. And you since then have been on leave from CNN. Do I have all that right?
You got it all right, sad to say.
Okay, so let's start there. To quote Jay Leno, what the hell were you thinking?
Well, obviously, I wasn't thinking very well or very much. And it was something that was inexplicable to me. I think one point, I wouldn't exactly say in my defense, because nothing is really in my defense. I didn't think I was on the call. I didn't think other people could see me.
You so, thought that you had turned off your camera?
Correct. I thought that I had turned off the Zoom call. Now, that's not a defense. This was deeply moronic and indefensible. But, I mean, that is part of the story. And, you know, I have spent the 7 subsequent months, miserable months in my life, I can certainly confess, trying to be a better person. I mean, in therapy, trying to do some public service, working in a food bank, which I certainly am going to continue to do, working on a new book about the
that's good.
Bombing.
Shout out. That's
I
good.
Am trying to become the kind of person that people can trust again.
There you go. I'm trying to become a better person. Doesn't mean he is, but he's trying, like all of us.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with Jeffrey Toobin and CNN. First off, CNN, I can't think of a station that has gone downhill more in my eyes in the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. They used to be the one with the other two that I would actually think, okay, there may be some objectivity. They're just playing the same game that everyone else is right now. The fact that you're going to be that hypercritical about other people, it is all political. Because if this would have been someone who's not on their team, then guess what? They would have been the first to say, you got to cancel his ass right away. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
That's just the reality of the divisive political world we live in.
Dude,
right
that
now.
Was so
And that
funny.
Goes on both sides.
That was so funny to me. I mean, the guy is apologizing like he murdered somebody. What does going to a food bank
have to do with you?
Have to do with you beating off on camera?
It's ridiculous. It's,
like, how is that going to help
get
you back into the good graces of people? Like, he's literally apologizing like he killed somebody, and they're letting him back in after doing that. I mean, what he did was bad. No question about that. But, yeah, that apology just felt overly dramatic.
Yeah.
And he's not making any excuses, but here's his excuse. But I'm not making any excuses, but here's my excuse. But I'm not making any excuses, but it is part of the story. I just want you all to know that. I don't know. I just thought that was hilarious. It was unbelievably cringeworthy. It was even worse if you could have watched it. But, yeah, it just it felt like over-the-top apology for something that was obviously really, really bad, but did not warrant that type of apology.
Well, if he didn't want to go on the apology tour, then you can't come back, right? To be let back into the good graces of, you know, the broadcast world, he was going to have to go on the apology tour. And I'm sure whoever his, you know, the editors of his book and the publisher of his book, they're really happy that he's back.
Oh, absolutely,
and
they are.
And now he's writing a book. I think we said the book's about the Oklahoma City bombing or something like that.
Oh, man.
But he's got a book out.
I bet he's got a good handle on that.
Well done. And that's one thing he's got to deal with. I can't tell you how many people are going to try to take random shots at him with puns and references and try to act like they did not make a really derogatory reference or that wasn't a pun. That should be pretty fun. But I think he's doing what all celebrities do, or anybody who is a public persona or anybody who's a public person has to do when they do something shameful that gets them canceled or gets them, you know, ostracized. They go on the apology tour and they say they're going to therapy.
Yep.
With therapy. Yeah. I'm doing something charitable. So he's a volunteer at this food bank. Yeah. There you go. He had another one in there, too.
Public service.
Public service.
The food bank, though, was in the same.
Yeah, he basically divided that one up.
And he's writing a book, which, oh, thank God.
I know.
Writing a
book. Throwing that in there. I got to make some money off this.
He's writing a book. Yeah. Oh, by the way, he's been miserable the last 7 months. Yeah. You got to say that you've
made
been
sure
miserable.
To get that in there.
That you've been miserable and you hate your life right now and hate yourself.
I mean,
so that people make, you know, they'll feel sorry for you and engender that sympathy.
Do we think he actually went to therapy?
Oh, yeah. He probably did.
He may not have listened or taken it seriously. But he made sure he showed up, and he's got documentation of it.
Boom.
That's it.
Yes.
Is that worth going to therapy for?
Yeah, because...
Well, if you're going to go to therapy, you should really go, you know, but yes.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, for that, like, we're making people go to therapy
I know.
Oh, you're
doing something that everybody else does?
Well, everybody goes to therapy when they get caught doing something shameful in their public persona. Yep. Everybody does. They go to therapy.
He can't masturbate anymore? What is the therapy for that?
No, but the problem is that it was on a Zoom call with colleagues.
Right, so like, what does the therapy do for that?
Oh,
it was doing a break of a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
So he obviously, if he can't be master of his domain for the hour that he's on the meeting with the New Yorker, then he's got a problem. Like, he's got a serious problem.
He could have a schedule where he does it the same time every day.
He needed that screen. That's his laptop.
He's got a problem. He's probably got, I don't know what his problem is, but dude, that ain't normal. You should be able to wait till after the meeting.
Agreed.
I think everybody understands, like, dude, you can wait till after the meeting. You wait after the meeting. Excuse yourself. Go to another room. Why do you have to do it in front of the Zoom camera? Why was that? Why did you have to have that happen in that moment? Why were you so, you know what I mean, motivated to go, like, oh, I got 5 to 10 minutes of a break here. I'm going to do this right here in front of this Zoom camera.
Right.
Why couldn't you just go to the bathroom or somewhere else?
Bad bit.
I
don't know what therapy's going to do for that. I don't know what
it won't
the food
do anything.
Bank is going to do
It won't do anything.
That.
It's about
Look, the real
it's
joke
about
the is
behavior,
the,
though.
The real joke is the hypocrisy of CNN here. Because if this would have been a Fox or a Fox person or a Republican, there's no way that they would be having the same approach or being this lenient.
I'll just give Jeffrey Toobin some love here because he just became the first person in history to become uncanceled. We'd all cancel this guy.
Yeah,
whether
the New Yorker
it's for political
CNN.
Reasons or not, like the guy became uncanceled. He's getting another chance after everybody had closed the book on him. That doesn't happen.
And I'm actually, you know what? What concerns me. It's about the fact that they're so hypocritical about it, and it's really about who you voted for. That's what it's about, period.
It's just weird that they had to bring
in terms
it back.
Of giving people breaks and then not giving the same person or the same thing, same action, a break just because you don't like that person. Like, to me, that is messed up.
He must be really good at his job.
I guess.
I don't watch Jeffrey Toobin that often, but I'm guessing he's the best. I'm guessing he's a LeBron James of legal analysts. Because if not, then there's nobody else who's a legal mind who's also halfway decent on camera
and television. Well, that's the other thing. He's a legal analyst.
Articulate where they could... Exactly.
If he was their food guy, it'd be something different.
Yeah.
He's the legal analyst. You're supposed to be kind of held to a higher standard, period.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't the master of my own domain.
Oh, my Lord.
But I went to the food bank one time.
Yep.
So forgive me.
BK doesn't think it's a big deal.
Right? No, like,
which is fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Like, that's...
I actually like that take.
This is way better than saying something racist or... like
Agreed.
Anti-gay or anything
Agreed.
Like that. Like, it's not good, and there should be punishment for that, but, like, I'm not canceling that guy for this.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to go to therapy for this.
But we don't know.
Like you said, what is therapy going
to
do?
He just says that he just forgot to turn the camera off, and then he was doing it there. But why'd you have to do it
It's a bad
there?
Bit.
Why'd you
it's
have to stay there
bit.
In the seat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, get up.
Did the danger of them catching you, was that part of the thrill that turned you on? Like, ooh, I'm doing it right here. If they catch me, this is great. Because some people...
Now, that could be therapy.
I don't know.
That could be food bank, too.
Oh, God.
Bank.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. There you go. Jeffrey Toobin, a tip of the cap, sir. You've been uncanceled. I didn't think it was possible. It's the triple option with RPKD. When we come back... yeah, I'm not going to try to make any weird jokes or puns to transition to
don't
Texas
baseball.
Don't lose
your job.
Don't do it. No. We'll talk about bats and balls with Texas baseball here coming up. The Super Regional tomorrow night. We'll preview it. And I'll tell you why. The one reason why I'm nervous about South Florida. I guarantee nobody's had this take. I've got it for you. Next.